so brave. You're so inspiring. I couldn't do that. How do you do that? It's like, I didn't choose it, dude.
No.
You do it because you have to.
And that's so true. That is so true. And I've said that to people as well when they've said, oh, yeah, you're so brave. You're so strong. I don't know if I could have, you know, responded in the way you have. And it's like, you just have to. Kia ora and welcome. You're listening to The C Word. I'm Helen King in Tamaki Makaurau, and we've got Belinda Tran Lawrence in Taranaki.
We're really hoping that we've got some hardcore listeners by this stage who know that we are up to it's fifth, isn't it, Helen? Fifth episode. I've lost count. Sixth episode.
Fifth or sixth, yeah.
Oh, maybe it's sixth.
And by hardcore listeners, we mean our families.
I don't think my mother has. I don't think the rest of my family has listened to it yet. They'll get there. I told them it's okay. It's about cancer.
Yeah, and they've kind of lived and breathed cancer with us.
They've probably had enough of it and listening to me talk, to be fair.
This is true. Yes, I think my family probably feels the same. But it has been an interesting week for both of us. We feel like we might be media famous by now, especially in Taranaki, after we graced the pages of the local newspaper, the Taranaki Daily News. And then I made an appearance in the Sunday Star Times. But I have to say, the article in the Taranaki Daily News was kind of... It was a bit more preferable. So just a little bit of context is that I used to be a journalist, and that's not how I make a coin anymore. But my former colleague said, will you be interviewed for this article? And it was about how COVID has impacted people's social lives. And she described me as upwardly mobile. So I think that sort of stroked my ego a bit because I, you know, definitely not upwardly
mobile. I wonder, what does upwardly mobile even mean? You're moving up through the classes? You're becoming like middle class and then upper class? What are you?
I don't know. Maybe it's like the modern day yuppie or something. I'm not sure. But so basically I said, yeah, sure, because I know what it's like when you're a journalist and you are trying to put a story together and getting people who are willing to share their experiences and be photographed and things like that. And so I think one of my downfalls sometimes is I'm really honest. So I talked about the fact that I have really struggled post-COVID and post-lockdown with willingly sort of leaving the house and going beyond my immediate neighbourhood. And I opened the Sunday Star Times website on Sunday morning, and the lead line into this article was, Helen King is afraid to leave the house.
And the photo, I laughed. I'm a horrible person. I laughed when I saw the photo. You were walking along the street, just like this really sad individual, like, I've got no friends.
And I know. I mean, the funny, it made me laugh too after being horrified, because I couldn't actually get my photo taken, and so they had these old photos of me from during treatment, so that was an old photo of me, and I'm actually kind of glad, because it's side profile, and you can't really tell it's me unless you really look at it. But the cutest thing ever happened as a result of it.
And it is super cute. It's super cute.
So after sort of feeling like, oh my God, people are going to think I'm the biggest saddo ever, I get this message on my Facebook, and it's this woman saying, I read the article and I really enjoyed it. I have a 25-year-old Down syndrome son who loves bike riding. I love cycling too, and it mentioned that in the article. Would you like to meet with us? And it would get you out of the house and it would help
him. How lovely is that? Imagine, she was at home and she read that article either online or in the newspaper, and she saw your photo and went, oh,
what a sad woman.
I can reach, I can help, I can be her friend. Yeah. I think that is amazing. And I hope you go ahead and meet with her and her son.
I am, and I will let you know all about it, because I actually think it was gorgeous, and that's what I really enjoy that sort of meeting people and connecting, especially through cycling. That's, you know, I can go into that, I'm sure, another time. But you know, it was actually a pretty cute outcome to a rather sad article. Yeah. But you also, I think you have had an interesting response to it, to our appearance in your local paper.
Yeah, I did actually, because I mean, the article was pretty straightforward. If anyone wants, we might throw a link out if you can go and have a look. It was really just about the podcast and what we're doing here, which if you're listening, you already know. But in it, the title, the way that I was described, was as a cancer survivor. And interestingly, just the day before, in one of my cancer groups, I had actually brought this topic up with the other people in the group and said, I'm not that comfortable with this term. And I don't even know why I thought about it the day before. Like, what do you guys think? What do you use? I tend to talk about things like I've had a journey with cancer, or cancer has been part of my journey. I've had an experience. I really tend to steer away from cancer survivor. It's a term I feel uncomfortable with, and I discovered that most of the people who responded also felt uncomfortable. And nothing, like, this is not in any way a criticism of the reporter or the newspaper or anything, but I think it just showed that this is just the fallback narrative. It's the fallback label that we use that we don't even think about. And that led us to think about narratives around cancer, like using the term cancer survivor, but also other things, because the term survivor also comes from that idea of, about cancer as a battle or a war. And then we started delving into that, didn't we, Helen? And
Here's an episode in this. And I do find this very interesting, because I, you know, spent a lot of my working life as a journalist, and I also, when I did my master's degree, I looked at the way a certain group was represented in the media. So I've always been relatively aware of the words we use to describe things, the baggage that can come with it, context that they're used in, and the meaning that can bring. And that's why, in some ways, I think if I hadn't been a journalist, and I'd read Helen King is Afraid to Leave Her House, I would have been, you know, it would have been quite a different sort of response. But I just kind of shook it off and went, oh, okay. Because one of the hardest things about being a journalist is that you are responsible for telling someone else's story, and you are filtering that through your own lens, your own experiences. And sometimes they get it amazingly right, and other times, they might create meaning or create, a picture that the person who's been interviewed doesn't relate to, and I think that's probably what we both experienced.
Yeah, and that whole idea, I mean, you come to it from a background as a journalist, and interestingly, Helen and I have similar perspectives on this, even though that's not my background. My background is academically in anthropology, and I still work for a university, and I work within areas where we talk a lot about stories, and we talk a lot about narratives, and we talk about the way in which what we say and how we talk about things makes meaning of the world for us.
Yes.
And to me, a lot of how we talk about cancer, there are certain stock phrases that get used. Cancer survivor is one example. The whole battle metaphor is another one.
Yeah.
We'll probably come back to it later in this conversation, but we also talk about people as being brave, being inspirational. And those things, for some people, will be true. And for some people, that narrative does describe their experience.
Yeah.
But for a lot of other people, and I think Helen and I and lots of people fall into this camp, is those overwhelming narratives make us feel completely unseen. our individual stories and our individual ups and downs and the harsh reality of that, the realness of it, is just subsumed into this idea that you've got cancer, you're exactly the same as the next person with cancer. Everybody who has cancer is the same.
Well, yes.
Of course they're not.
No, and it's so interesting you say that. I was thinking as you were talking, and this is what I found, is that I think people want us to be warriors. They want us to be survivors and battlers and that sort of thing, because cancer is very, very frightening. And it's frightening to people because it's, you know, it is very close to a lot of us, and it is associated with death. And I think it's also associated with being out of control of your body. And I think, especially for Western cultures, we have to be in control of our bodies. And so, you know, that whole narrative feeds into that, because people can't cope with you not being okay with it. You know, and it's not
part of that is because if you're not okay with it, that makes them feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
Because then they've got to figure out what maybe they could do, and nobody likes to feel uncomfortable.
No, and I think that's it. Because I think it comes out in different ways. It's like, I know that, you know, I've lost friends through the cancer diagnosis. It's almost like some people move back, some people move forward, and I think not many people are equipped to sit and just be with you in your discomfort. You know, I know, especially, you know, for Belinda and I, especially through chemo, it was probably very obvious we were on chemo because we didn't have any hair. And I know for me, I was bloated and I couldn't wear a prosthesis for a while, so I only had one boob. And all of those things are very, you know, they're confronting for the person who has them, but I think they're also very confronting, you know, for the people that are kind of witnessing it.
I had an interesting conversation with someone today, which I am going to come back to later. But she said to me that she made a few posts on Facebook when she was going through treatment and diagnosis and all of that. And she said people unfriended her. Like every time she made a post, she had people unfriending her. I'm still puzzled. Maybe I don't get Facebook well enough as to how you know that, because now I want to go But I mean, I was really shocked around that. And, of course, we don't know the reason why. You know, it'd be very easy to feel very hurt, but it might simply come down to that person had enough going on in their life.
Yes.
And they couldn't handle that, or it was triggering them for some other reason. You know, we can't assume we know the reasons.
No.
But certainly being on the receiving end of feeling that a friend is not able to walk with you is really difficult. And rewinding to something you said earlier, Helen, about in our Western way of life, it is very individualist, and it is very much, I agree with you, we have a thing about control.
Yes.
And I think that ties into the battle metaphors, the war metaphors, and it's interesting when you contrast it against, for want of a better way of saying it, more Eastern way of looking at the world. But, of course, they're not just Eastern. They're just ways of looking at the world that are not so Western-centric. Yeah. And it is more about, I think there's more of a comfort in sitting with things and in recognising that in actual fact all parts of your life don't have to be amazing.
No, not at all.
And you are going to have ups and you are going to have downs. What's the Buddhist philosophy? That life is pain? I'm probably vastly oversimplifying that, and maybe someone can correct me, but that, you know, with Hollywood and with all of that has come this idea that we've got to be our best selves every instant. We've got to be making the most of everything, and we're supposed to be happy, and that puts it. You have a lot of pressure on people.
It does, and I think this ties into something I wanted to, you know, when I made my notes of what we want to talk about today, is that what is the narrative around cancer. And we often, I think, get our narrative from the media. So I did a very quick search, and I need to say it wasn't extensive. I didn't spend, you know, days or months, you know, pulling out all the examples. But a pretty quick search of Cancer NZ in Google, seeing what came up in the news. And to me, if I was to put it into a few words, it would be that cancer is tragic, that it's more tragic when it happens to young people, and there's an element of fear-mongering. And the thing I really noticed is who is missing from this narrative. And it's older people, for a start, you know, of maybe the sort of mum and dad or our mum and dad's ages and that sort of thing. And I feel like it can be quite a white narrative at times, just from what I was...
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would definitely agree with that. I don't think we see in the media, or at least we don't in New Zealand, we don't see what is it like being a Pacific Island person with cancer. What is it like being a Māori person with cancer?
Yes.
There is this idea, and, you know, I don't think there's been occasion to bring this up before. You guys can't see me, but I am a non-white, non-Māori New Zealander, and that comes with all its own ways of experiencing the world. And I am very conscious of the fact that I walk in a white world, and it is a white world that I live in. So, you know, this is the normative ideas. I don't want to get kind of too far out in academic speak here, but we think of that as the normal way of being.
Yes.
Anything else is abnormal or different or ethnic. Ethnic people. What the heck is an ethnic person?
Basically, I think it's non-white. That's what it is.
I'll take that label.
My ethnic co-host.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
And looking at the media, you wouldn't realise that in actual fact, Māori and Pacific Island are overrepresented in cancer
statistics. Absolutely. And I, just for my, you know, the work I'm in, I do quite a bit of work within the Pacifica community, and I've been looking into this recently. So Belinda and I both had HER2-positive breast cancer, which is very aggressive, and I found a piece of research that she said Pacifica women are more likely to have HER2-positive. Which makes sense in terms of the aggressiveness and the, you know, higher chance of dying from it, because Pacifica people, you know, they present a lot later. But it's funny what you're saying about, you know, where are they in representation? Because I've been trying to find a Pacifica breast cancer survivor for an event, and I can't, looking through... there's no one that really stands out, if you know what I mean. And so I sort of feel like the voice out there is a very specific one. And I mentioned a term before that Belinda hadn't heard, but we sometimes do throw it around in media, is that it's tragedy porn. People...
I've never heard that before. It's very true.
Yeah, and this is the thing. I mean, I've got half a dozen or so links to quite recent articles from our, you know, major news sources about cancer, and it is all about young mother. Yeah, there's at least actually half of them are young white women who...
And it's all about what sells. It's all about what's going to get someone to click on it.
And people do click on that stuff because it's tragic, it's awful, and I feel like, you know, it really does cut out the experience of a lot of people who have had cancer. And we've said it quite a lot, because I guess this is what we want to drum home to people, is that the reality of a cancer diagnosis is not often what we're shown, and we want to sort of, you know, give space and give people the opportunity to say what their experience was.
Yeah, and I think I'm a people who know me well, if you're listening to this, are going to laugh right about now. I'm all about space. I had it printed on a sweatshirt once, and it was like the Leavers sweatshirt for that year at the high school I was teaching at.
Yeah.
I've got this whole thing about space, which you don't want to hear me go on about. But it is, it's about inner space, whose voices are being heard, whose voices are not being heard. And I want to bring it, bring the idea along there to also the idea of consent. Because in one way we talk about control, but it's also about consent. When someone else has control of your story,
yes,
you've lost that consent.
Yes.
You know, you did not consent for your story to be represented in that way.
No.
And the thing is, I was reading something today that was talking about it. I think it was by the anthropologist. No, it was an article by a group of oncologists who were talking about the battle metaphor. And they were talking about how cancer is hard, obviously, but it's also about losing things. You lose... Yes. You lose a lot of control.
Yes.
You lose control over all sorts of things, you know. You have to, not everybody, but quite often you have to step out of your life as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you might not be able to go to work, and you might not be able to engage in the kind of activities that give you joy and that you were choosing to do beforehand. You might not be able to see your friends. You might lose parts of your body. Your body might change. There's so much that you have no control over.
Yeah.
Change is happening everywhere. And to be able to have control over your own story and how that is told and how you are represented. And we're not just talking about the media here, because the majority of people with cancer don't want to be talked about in the media.
No.
You know, we could just be talking about how you're talked about amongst your friends or what your family is saying. When every person is saying to you, "You're so brave, you're so inspirational." I couldn't do that. How do you do that? It's like, I didn't choose it, dude.
No.
You do it because you have to.
And that's so true. That is so true. And I've said that to people as well when they've said, "Oh, you're so brave, you're so strong. I don't know if I could have, you know, responded in the way you have." And it's like, you just have to. Like, I had moments where I thought, no more, I can't do this. But the reality is that there's part of you that is in full fighting for your life mode. And you kind of, you're in this space where you just have to keep moving. And I don't know whether I was brave or strong and that sort of thing, because I, you know, I didn't show my meltdowns via social media or to certain people, because, you know, you're in such a vulnerable place that you kind of have to filter what you show. I don't know, I think that the narrative around this stuff, it doesn't serve us anymore.
No, I would agree with that. Having said that, I was thinking this while you were saying it. I'm going to be quite contradictory here. However, I mean, we're complex people,
yes,
and we can definitely believe in two seemingly contradictory ideas at the same time.
Absolutely.
Like, in one way, yes, those narratives can make you feel invisible, but then in another way, at the end of the day, when you're feeling like complete crap and you're falling apart and your husband sits beside you and goes, "You can do this, you are stronger than this, you are so brave," you know, that is meaningful.
Oh, absolutely. And maybe that's it, though, is from the people that are there with you. Maybe it's those throwaway comments.
Maybe that's what
it is. Yeah. Throwaway comments and things that are perhaps the harder ones. But I just wanted to go back to, I think this is an article that Belinda sent me, but because I have a terrible memory, I can't actually be sure, but it is, the general gist is the same. So I really like this, and it goes back to what we're talking about in terms of the war metaphor, and it's from a gentleman called Michael P. Coleman, from a journal article, and there's some of the points that he makes that we've been talking about in this episode is that it was President Nixon who coined the phrase around the war on cancer, and it actually wasn't that far from the war on drugs, and I have very strong views. Strong views on how the war on drugs has actually affected
people.
That's for another podcast. Yeah. But the general idea of what Michael P. Coleman is talking about here, I love, and some of the stuff he says is the language of war, victory and defeat is misplaced and outdated. All cancer patients everywhere deserve prompt, equitable access to optimal treatment and pain relief. And I love that. That to me is the essence of it. And then he goes into talking about that the media actually have responsibility about what they're researching and what they're actually presenting. And I guess spoke to me because of my experience in my previous life as a working journalist. And he talks about the fact that reporters should actually start rejecting those cliches and, you know, the hyperbole, which I can never say, and actually start really asking questions about what are the breakthroughs, what is working, and that sort of thing, not the tragedy porn.
Down with tragedy porn. The other thing that we haven't touched on about the war and the battle narrative is, well, if someone loses a battle, there's a winner, there's a loser.
Yeah.
And so if someone doesn't manage to be miraculously cured of cancer, and let's face it, they're one of those articles I read, you know, they're talking about how chemotherapy is basically all we've got.
Yeah.
And it works for some, doesn't work for everybody. It's a very inexact method. It's just kind of like napalming everything and we'll see what happens.
Absolutely, yeah.
So there are lots of people who die with cancer or die of cancer. They haven't lost. And their families should not be left with that feeling that if they had done something different or if they had fought more or...
Yes, because yeah.
The guilt that puts on someone, you know, that as if there is something you could have done differently because the person who wins the battle is the person who fights the hardest.
And this... So I'm getting overexcited. I know, I'm waving my pen at the Zoom because I'm getting excited about these ideas. But I really like that because this goes back to what I was saying before, is that humans feel that they need to, you know, they need to have control. And if you just do these things, and this is, I think, where some of that real snake oil stuff comes in, the fake cures and that sort of thing, that really feeds in.
It is seriously going to be a whole entire podcast. Oh, it'll be really interesting.
Yeah, because I think that really feeds into that idea that if you just do this thing, then you'll beat it. Because, you know, our guest last week, Tasha and I, you know, were talking about it before, as we were setting up, that whole thing that you go through this phase, and I'm kind of still in it, to be honest, where you do really worry that every little thing you do might bring the cancer back. So it's, am I getting too stressed? You know, will that bring the cancer back? If I am not positive enough, you know, is my mindset going to bring it back? Would eating that cake because it's delicious but it's got sugar in it, is that going to bring the cancer back? And I think, you know, all of that stuff feeds into each other, which then feeds into those wackadoodle cures. And then the stuff that ends up in our papers.
And that it doesn't serve us well. It really doesn't. Having cancer is bad enough. Feeling guilty because you have cancer.
Yeah.
Because if you'd eaten differently, if you'd exercised more, and the idea that something we want to control things. So we want to think that there is something we can do or not do that will make a difference. And yes, science does say that there are things that help. But it's not as simple. It's not a causative factor. It is when there is no way that we are anywhere close to the it of knowing that this behaviour causes it, or this food, or it's just not.
No.
When you're sitting in the oncology ward and you're getting chemotherapy along with everybody else in your region who's got cancer at that time, you do not look around and see a whole heap of people who have not looked after themselves and therefore cancer.
No.
You see old people and young people. You see fit people. You see overweight people and skinny people and normal size. But you see everything.
And actually, gosh, that just occurred to me, you know, sorry, this is my squirrel brain. What we were talking about the fact that it is usually young people represented as cancer patients. So I was 37, 38 when I was having my treatment, and especially when I went to Auckland Hospital to have Herceptin, I was always the youngest person, either in the waiting room, which was always very full, or in the infusion room where I got my Herceptin. 99% of the time I was the youngest person. And so the other people, good 20, 30 years on me. So I think that...
Mostly everyone was older than me too, yeah. It was very seldom to see someone my age, and I was 43.
Yeah.
So I was having a discussion, an online discussion. Most of my discussions these days take place online because I work from home and I'm permanently socially distanced. With a woman who had cancer a couple of years ago. She was actually diagnosed in 2017. She had breast cancer and she finished treatment, which was successful for her in September of 2018. So she's, you know, a year and a half out now. And what she did is she posted in one of my groups something that she wrote when she was in the midst of it. We were talking about the term cancer survivor and do we love it, do we not love it. And she said, well, this, she used to lie awake at 3 a.m. and we all have 3 a.m. thoughts, and she would have 3 a.m. rants. And then over a series of 3 a.m. rants, she decided to try and actually write it down. Now, what she came up with was completely beautiful.
Mm.
She has a real talent for putting her ideas into words. And her name is Christine Jeffrey. I had a chat with her today and she said she's fine for us to talk about it. And I wanted to read a portion of it. Now, she does actually... She has decided in some of this to actually claim the battle metaphor. Mm. And good on her. We're not saying let's not use it at all. We're saying...
We're challenging it. Well, we're just... Yeah.
Yeah. We're saying that that should be a choice.
Yeah.
And I wanted to read just the beginning and the end, but we will put the whole text up on our Facebook page with her name, so that if you want to go and have a... read of it. My eyes were leaking by the end of it last night. So I'm going to try really hard to keep it together this time. She called it On Being a Warrior. There isn't anything that can prepare you for a cancer diagnosis. Cancer is one of those things that pretty much every single person has been touched by in one way or another. A family member or a friend, a colleague, a pet. We see it in shows and stories we read. We all know cancer. We see it all around us every day, but there is absolutely nothing that prepares you for your own diagnosis. It's a moment filled with a thousand little lifetime memories of fear and worry assaulting you at once. It's a suffocating panic. It's a raw elemental fear that quickly becomes your bedfellow. It's the company you keep at 3 a.m. when you can't sleep that whispers to you in the dark. Everything is worst in the dark and nothing good happens at 3 a.m. Cancer sucks. Let's start there. It simply sucks. No matter the words used to convey the hell of it, it makes you feel like crap. The physical pain and alteration. People exclude or ignore you because they don't know what to say, while some pity or patronize you. It will change your life view, not to mention your body and mind. You suck, chemo brain. There is just so much crap ramped up in what becomes a massive anger and sadness and pain. Thankfully, there are wonderful people who stand by your side and give that supportive input that for a moment makes you feel you are not in this alone. You've got this, they cheer, even if you've never had less control of anything in your entire life. Their positivity helps you be positive too. Keep them close as they are treasures in a sea of uncertainty.
Oh,
and
my God.
The end part that is going to be my difficult bit. Go fight like a warrior in your armor crafted from the cold steel of fear, with your shield made from 3 a.m. tears and your weapons forged from realism. Because you are a warrior, I am a warrior too. Look at me. Saying I hate battle metaphors, and that's almost making me cry. The shield made from 3 a.m. tears. I want someone to draw that for me now. That's an amazing image.
I know. And do you know, I think that Christine posted this in a forum I'm on Facebook, Shocking Pink, which is a charity that supports younger women with breast cancer. And I think it came at the right time, because I can remember reading that and going, yeah, that's it. I've not cried the sort of tears that I have for anything else other than those 3 a.m. just deep fear of going through cancer treatment. There's just been nothing else in my life that I've experienced that has come close to that. I think that what Christine's post really brings up, and I think what we've been talking about brings it up, is that everyone has their own personal preference or way of wanting, of wanting their cancer experience to be explained or described.
And that changes too. It's different at different points and different stages.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. And I think for me, like, I say cancer experience. I sometimes don't like journey. I do say cancer survivor for want of a better word, but I think it really has, you know, looking through the news recently, I think for both of us, it really brought up just thinking about how things are represented and whether or not do you connect with it. And I have to say that I think that the spin-off, when they do these stories, actually does it quite well. And they...
Huge spin-off fan. Just putting that out there, is a little bit of a plug for the spin-off here.
Yeah.
They reflect my worldview quite accurately.
Yeah, me too. I really value the spin-off. I think that the media does have a part to play, but I think we do as well, like being able to give these platforms. So, look, we want to hear from people. So if you relate to anything we say, if you have things that you think we should talk about, get in touch with us. Find us on Facebook and flick us a message. Just look up the C Word Podcast. And we're always open to people connecting and talking with us or sharing their experiences. So...
Yeah, please do, because sometimes it feels a little bit like we're talking to the void.
Yeah.
We don't do it live, so we can't take listeners'
phone calls
at all.
Yeah.
So please, you know, if there's anything that you agree with, disagree with, want to have a debate about, so long as it's a healthy, constructive, respectful
debate. Yes,
we're all about that.
So
if you want us to talk about, let us know.
Yeah. And we're quite excited in the coming weeks, because the election is coming up. We will be talking to politicians about what's on offer. If you want to add to anything, if you think there are points that should be raised, please let us know. But that will be coming up in the coming weeks, just talking around, what we actually need in the cancer community, what we need in our health system. That will be coming up. So please keep listening.
Yeah, and how each party is planning to address that. You know, what are their plans? Mm. How would they put those into practice?
Yes. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to our, you know, our thoughts. You can listen back
our
to
ramble,
our tangents. Yeah. It should really be called Helen and Belinda's Tangents. So you can subscribe to us on iTunes now. So please do that. I would love to have some.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So now I need to figure out how they have iTunes.
Yeah. You can. You can also listen to us on Planet FM every Sunday within Auckland, Tamaki Makaurau on 104.6 FM. Also, listen back to all of our episodes on planetaudio.org.nz/thecword or online when we broadcast that. Didn't come out very well, but you know what I mean. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
You and I could, you know, just get together. Please, but Love might bring us back together. I feel so good. I feel right. The music sounds better with you. Love might bring us back together.
Se baila así, y que se puede, se puede, se goza.